Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode of the podcast. My guest today is the one and only Professor Pedro Sauer. He is an 8th degree coral belt under Helio and Hicks and Gracie. He's just an all-around cool guy and just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to jiu-jitsu and just life in general. We had an awesome chat, and he was just dropping knowledge for an hour. As always, this show is brought to you by The Fight Factory, which you can find at www.thefightfactory.com. Head to that website for all the latest in MMA gear and apparel. Also head to their Facebook page, The Fight Factory Australia, to be kept in the loop with all the latest news circulating the web. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy.
You know the deal.
Are we recording? Oh, we're recording.
Let's do it.
Have you recorded?
He sneaks up on you like that.
Kid China.
We've got a hell of an episode today. We've got returning Roger Dio, Phil Grapsis, and the internationally known, locally respected Pedro Sauer, one of the greatest instructors in the world in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. How are you, sir?
Thank you, amigo. I'm doing great on you guys.
Awesome. I'm good. Yeah, doing good. How have you found Melbourne this time around?
Beautiful place, man. I love it. Every time that I come here, it's such a nice environment. Beautiful place. Great practitioners. Everybody here is really cool. I really love to be here.
Do you find that Melbourne Jiu-Jitsu, and in particular Australian Jiu-Jitsu, is up to par with America and Brazil? Or is it still lagging, or has that changed?
No, I think it's been changing a lot. I think since I start coming here and I see a lot of good practitioners going, it's incredible the amount of practitioners right now. The technician is incredible. Beautiful mechanics. I think you guys over here are doing great.
Cool. What we're going to do, we'll ask questions, but we're going to just take this as wild as it can go. So if you have the temptation to tell any stories, don't hesitate. We'll start off with, You had martial arts experience prior to jiu-jitsu, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
What did that involve?
Well, my sister was married with a Brazilian champion in boxing. So she right from the beginning, she already helped me out with boxing. His name was Marcio Matar. And he put me to start to show me some moves here and there. And she had another boyfriend, and the name was Beto, who was doing jiu-jitsu at the time with Helio Gracie. So he always knew that I was, when I was a kid, I was a little bit wild, I was pretty intense as a kid, pretty hyper. So he put me to train jiu-jitsu with the neighbors, with people around, you know, our building where I used to live. And anyway, I started judo when I was about 9-10 years old, and I did for quite a while. And after that, I did taekwondo until green belt. I test for yellow belt in Rio de Janeiro with Marco Ruas. Back in the 70s, I guess, really early time. And after that, I did a little bit of capoeira. And that's when I discovered jiu-jitsu. On my 14, 15 years old, I discovered jiu-jitsu, and I never looked back.
And then it was Hicks and Gracie who was the one who got you into jiu-jitsu, and he was a childhood friend of yours, wasn't he?
Yes, we knew each other from the streets. We used to hang out on the streets, just a fun time and party time, and just having good times on the streets. And I didn't know nothing about jiu-jitsu. He never told me. He was a very quiet guy, pretty friendly, humble. So I didn't know nothing about jiu-jitsu, to be honest.
What was the first experience like when you first went down to train at the Gracie Academy?
That was a pretty that was a very incredible beating that I got there. So I was I just got raped pretty much.
Yeah.
I got spanked.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do nothing about it. And I realized how unfair jiu-jitsu was at that day on, because I knew that my opponent didn't want to spar with me. He just wanted to take me down.
Yeah.
And it was pretty tricky when you have one person who doesn't want to spar with you and using self-defense in a way to trick you to come close to him. And when the moment you arrive, the moment you come close to the guy to try to strike, he just charges in. So it was not fair. It was a complete unfair. And I can see this being completely unfair in jiu-jitsu as a self-defense when you talk about street fights. You know, you can walk away from trouble. You always walk away from trouble. But if the trouble comes towards you, you walk towards the trouble, you close the gap, and that's when the environment comes very badly for an unprepared guy.
And that's something that you try and instill in all your students and your instructors, especially who try and pass that mentality on to their students? And it seems that that's starting to travel the world, really, with branches and branches of all new, of all your affiliations. It's spread, it's made its way to Melbourne, all yes. from that day, really.
Yeah, that I try to pass to everybody the idea of I believe that most of people that come to martial arts, they come because they heard about, you know, jiu-jitsu and UFC. They people talk about, they have the understanding, like, is something going on in jiu-jitsu. Unfortunately, today, jiu-jitsu took a turn for the competitive style. A lot of people competing and getting promoted because they're just tough, they're well-prepared, they tape out the fingers, you know, they take some steroid shots, and they get in a competition like a beast. And what happened is they win many matches and end up to get a, you know, a gold medal for the competition. They compete again, gold medal. Pretty soon they promote belt. The belt's getting changed by the performance the guy has on the match. And pretty soon the guy's a black belt. But that doesn't mean that he cannot make another person be the way how he is. And I think that's it's kind of sad to see the jiu-jitsu going to that direction, where the instructor is just a super tough guy, very talented guy, and he's going to attract only talent and tough people, because otherwise a normal human being is going to be very hard to progress in the kind of environment. Mm. And that's the misunderstanding that a lot of people get from jiu-jitsu, where Grandmaster Elio Gracie, when he developed the style, he developed to make sure that any person can use for, any human being can walk in school and can benefit from jiu-jitsu practitioner, from jiu-jitsu training. That's the difference. Mainly is that Grandmaster Elio didn't focus too much in competition. We competed. I competed in every bout that I have. I competed. But doesn't mean that every training that I did in the school was toward the competition, was everything regards competition. We did everything regards self-defense first. And the idea was like this thing about not to get beat. You just try to not to get beat. What you do, you just walk away from fight. You step up, you step back, avoiding fight, avoiding confrontation. But if the person comes towards you to try to score you, you close the gap. And that's the mentality. That's the strategy that Grandmaster Elio Gracie brought up for jiu-jitsu. And of course, when you're down on the ground, you never risk to put a, you know, for a move, for a strike. Let's imagine you end up in your back. It's quite a normal. If you are a small person and you fight somebody twice your size, the odds are that you're going to be in your back. And when you're in your back, you want to try to revert the position, try to go to the top. When you are all competition mindset, what you do, you sacrifice positions to try to score the point. You're so ingrained to get those 2 points or so ingrained for the competition style that what you do, you sacrifice positions. And you put your hand between somebody's legs. You don't have idea how to stop a punch. You don't have idea how to stop a headbutt. And pretty soon you're a black belt in jiu-jitsu getting beat in the streets because you don't have a self-defense or preparation. You just got so ingrained in the competition. And I believe.
Where do you think that happened, Professor? Where do you think the train went off the rails there?
I think in the middle 90s.
Mid 90s. Is that mid 90s. When the majority of the Gracie family moved to the United States?
We left
Brazil unattended, or?
Yeah, basically it's that. So we moved to America in Hickson moved in 1989. Mm-hmm. I moved in 90, and a lot of people came in 1990. 1990 was a start. But at that time, nobody knew jiu-jitsu in America. It was very hard to make a living there. Mm-hmm. I lived at Hickson's house for 6 months, and I was watching Hickson teach pride class for $20 an hour, $20 half an hour. For private class, and that was very cheap there. And
imagine that.
Yeah, that was crazy, because think about that. We have somebody who has a talent of Hickson Grace kill himself the whole entire day, sometimes 8, 9 hours, 10 hours day to make a living. And back at the time we grapple, but everything was more based on self defense aspect. And when the middle 90s, when UFC came and started on Royce Gracie start fighting, now jiu-jitsu started getting popular in the mainstream. People start talking about that. And what happened is IBJJF started, and I believe in 96, 97, somewhere, give and take at that time. Mm-hmm. And when they started, people started drawing to competition. So that's when the competition started working as a mainstream, is when you could be in Brazil and you could compete in. You could go to competition every 3 months. You could have a competition every 4 months. You could have competition.
IBJJF started in America or in
no? Started in Brazil.
In Brazil,
yes, in Brazil.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how it started.
There was tournaments before the IBJJF, though.
Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
So why do you think? Why do you think that this sport, the drift occurred more with the IBJJF than it did before the federation before that was running the tournaments?
Yeah, one thing is rules.
Yeah.
You know, when you put rules in tournaments, we as a human beings, we just adapt. We just make our adaptation. And you know, think of today how much use of your uniform can you do it when you're wrapping uniform around your leg, when you're holding you know, when you last, when you do a lot of tricks, those things shows up in tournaments. And the whole goal is for you to spin backwards, upside down, and end up on top. You know, now can you imagine you doing this on the street with like somebody twice your size punching your head?
It's not going to happen.
It is just impossible. You're just going to get knocked out. So
yeah,
that's the difference that happened in mainly in people who like jiu-jitsu tournaments. And I'm 100% in favor. I love it. Only goal that I want to see, I want to see all my students go to competition to submit the opponent, not to win by points. Win points, I believe, is a consequence of a good work that you do.
Yeah.
You just cannot put all your money in that basket and try to come up ahead, and down the road, what you're going to teach are your guys, and you open your school, and in front of 20, 30, 50, 100 people in front of you, and you're teaching everybody how to be upside down, and not even count the injuries. If you think about the injuries, when you start to do a lot of competition, it's pretty harsh in your body. It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
You know, and you put yourself in a bad spot, and somebody just dropped their weight on you. And that's you, and right now with a lower back, oh, my back's already here, my knee's already there. And you don't know why you're getting so mauled. Basically, jiu-jitsu, you have to protect yourself. You are the most responsible person to protect the joints.
Especially when people are training for weight classes. They're not training to defend off someone who is, say, 100 pounds heavier than you, which is something that would have been in the original intention, like with the whole leverage situation, which was Helio Gracie's original plan.
Exactly. Helio Gracie, when we went to America, so many times I had people knocking my door to try to fight me. No hose bar fighting, because the challenge that Gracie's put in the magazine. And I was the first guy who opened a Gracie Academy in Utah. So I had people on there fighting, say, I want to get my $100,000. How can you get some money? And Grandmaster Helio, you know, I used to talk to him, and he was like, well, just make sure to make him say uncle. How do you get in the phone and just say, no, Pedrinho, don't worry, I just talk to the guy. Are you going to fight? There's no money involved. The trick was, the proposal was, yeah, you can make $100,000 to beat a black belt in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, but you have to put $10,000. Yeah. And nobody want to do that, but you're already here, so let's do for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the whole trick. That's what happened. So we all fought for free all the time.
Yeah. Talking about no holds barred fight, do you want to run us through that famous video that is on that's on Batchelor. YouTube with Lance Batchelor? It was Mr. Utah. How did that all come about?
What happened was that the Hoist fought the UFC one, and I went to a radio station in Utah called the K-Bear 101. And when I was walking there, apparently Mr. Utah, he saw me walking there, and he had a show. He had a broadcast show that he was the guru and giving tips how to get fit, how to, you know, take care of himself. You know, how.
Yeah.
No, he was a very big individual. So, and he saw me walking there, and he said, well, this guy is too skinny, too small. I can't beat him anytime. And the radio guys, you know, they start teasing. Apparently, the whole show was this kind of teasing him back and forth. Well, next day, when the radio started, the radio came again. I was sleeping, and one of my students, his name was Kazeka, he came to me and said, Pedro, got a phone call over here, and it's from the radio. And Kazeka turned the radio on, and at that moment, I was talking to a guy, barely spoke English at the time, and I was talking to a guy, and he was kind of saying, yeah, I'm going to fight you, I'm going to break you, I'm going to do this. I couldn't get very well what he was talking about. I knew it was a fight. And I just told him, I hope you know what you're doing. That's the only thing that I kind of mentioned. It was that. And we fought 2 days later. So he called me on a Tuesday. We fought on a Friday morning. And no preparation, no fight, no We went there with no gloves, no mouthpiece, no groin protection. It was a brawl. I don't even know what the fight was going to be.
Yeah.
So I wear my shoes because I thought we were going to be in a parking lot somewhere just in case. So I put my shoes on later. So it was mat time. I didn't know it was mat there when we did.
Was that crowd all there for him or were they?
It was, well, it was, I want to say a lot of crowd came from the radio station.
Yep.
I had some of my students there.
Yeah.
And everybody was pretty surprised because nobody knew it was April Fool's Day.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was a joke.
Yeah, people could thought it was going to be a joke, I guess. And when they see, when they saw their blood going around and smacking, you know,
joke
like,
was on him.
Yeah. Well, you keep in mind, I left the fight. I didn't have one scratch in my face. And, you know, for I believe for somebody who gave up so much weight at that moment, even though the guy was saying there was not a fighter, not a professional fighter, whatever, but apparently his coach, it was a fighter. He was a guy who liked to fight, who likes to get involved in scuffling, and he was a pretty tough guy. And apparently, he owns a show in Utah that it is a very successful show. He make matches over there. So anyway, I can't believe he put the, let the guy fight. You know, because I understand not too long ago, a couple of years ago, somebody told me this guy was in the radio saying that. Yeah, the guy didn't know how to fight, so he just went there because he was a big guy.
Yeah.
But when he was challenging me, he said that he was a bouncer, he had over 100 fights, and he was a wrestler. So somehow he disappeared, all his skills went down.
He could wrestle, there was no way he was fluking that shit. You swept him twice, and just boom, back over.
Yeah, he had decent base.
He had good base. Yeah, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. He was not an angel.
Not a
he,
beginner, no way.
No, he was not an angel
grappled
guy.
Before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
for sure.
100%.
Yeah, so... Anyway, I was lucky to leave the fight with no scratches. That's basically what it was.
Still didn't save him. No. who was cornering you there, Professor? Who was giving you advice while you were putting a beating on him?
Oh, my corner was Mark Schultz.
Yeah, Mark Schultz. 2 points. Oh, was it?
Yeah, Mark Schultz was
oh,
my corner.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Mark Schultz.
That's crazy.
The Olympic wrestler.
Yep.
The Olympic champion wrestler.
Yep. Yeah.
So he was cornering you.
And Kazak was on my corner.
Yeah.
And but it was not a, it was just like a, I was just went there with, no preparation.
Yeah.
Just think about it. I wake up in the morning, I put my shoes,
you
my clothes, the same clothes I was, that's how I fought him.
Yeah.
I just left my home ready to fight.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be in the park lot.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it's like I'm going to open the door, I'm going to see the guy right there, and we're just going to brawl.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to a locker room, I'm not going to go to, you know, I just thought, we're just going to go straight to the fight.
Yeah.
Yes, I was.
He wouldn't have been happy seeing you and Mark Schultz walk through the door.
Well, I was more scared just to look at Mark.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
When you were in LA, in California, was it Torrance that you guys originally went to? The Gracies?
Yes.
At what point did you move to Utah? And then what was the situation there when you went out on your own?
What happened that I was in... I moved to California in May of 1990. And I stayed there until December of 1990.
Yep.
December of 1990, I went to Utah. I moved there because I met a guy. His name was Steve Bishop. And he took me... I met him in the garage, Hicks's garage. And Steve, he spoke Spanish. And I learned Spanish when I arrived in California. Because of my job, I started working with some ladies that spoke Spanish. And this lady spoke with me all day. Mm. So I ended up learning Spanish. So I could communicate myself with Steve. And he's convinced me to go to Utah. I have no idea what Utah was about. I never seen it before. I have no idea how mountains, cold, snow, zero. The religion, I have no clue. I went to Utah as a completely fresh guy, trying to get away from the California crowd. Because 6 months I was there, I couldn't speak a word in English. Because I was just hanging out with my friends.
Yeah.
So I decided to go there to stay away. To be successful in America, I knew that I have to learn English.
Yeah.
So that was my first decision. You know, Utah was tough. It was hard because I moved to a very small town. It was very cold. I went there as the coldest winter ever registered in Utah.
I was just about to ask.
Especially
you,
coming from California via Rio.
It was freezing. And not just that.
Yeah, true.
I got to know. I started working construction in Utah. And I was making $5 an hour. Working construction up in the mountains in Park City. The altitude was close to 8,000 feet up in the mountains.
Yeah.
And 12-hour shift. Every hour was a bell that was ringing every single hour. We have to drop our tools, go to a trailer, switch the pads in our gloves, switch the pads in our feet. The doctor check our ears and nose for frostbite, and you go back for another hour for work. Huh. I done that for the whole entire winter.
Shit.
And it was 12-hour shift from 7 in the morning to 7 at night. One night, I was working inside. And when the job was done and I stepped outside, I couldn't find my car. I just saw mountains of snow. It took me about an hour and a half to discover and to unbury my car.
Yeah.
My car was just buried in the snow. And that was an hour drive. And after drive back an hour, I have to teach class for 2 hours and spar every single student and every single one twice my size.
Yeah.
I was teaching class in a word gym, like a bodybuilder gym. Every single student there was humongous.
Yeah. And especially going to working like that, because back in Rio, you're actually quite educated and you're working. What were you doing for work prior to moving to America?
I was a broker.
Yeah.
I worked as a stock market for 12 years.
Yeah.
So I got a good, I went to college. I did 8 years of college in that was right by the school. And I just spent all my time basically as a broker.
Yeah.
But my job in the academy was side by side.
Yeah.
So every single break that I had, lunchtime, you know, if I can find somebody to cover me up, I was back in the school. Every time I went to college, to my school, and the teacher missed the class, I was back in the academy. I just have to go down one stair, go to the other building, go up, I was in the academy.
Yeah. And when it came to leaving for America, when you presented that opportunity, did you ever have any doubts or you know, were you ever second guessing yourself that it was the right thing to do, to just abandon everything and move to America?
No, I have no doubt. Somehow I have this drive that I knew it, that I got in a little problem happened with me in Brazil. I had I was robbed. Robbery. Somebody took me in my car.
Yep.
And I spent a very delicate moment, and I have to fight myself against somebody who was inside my car. Yep. It was a mess. It was like a knife robbery.
Yeah.
The guy tried to put a knife on my neck.
Shit.
And shaking, and I felt blood going down, and the guy was completely on drugs. And when I felt that opportunity of using the brakes of my car and move forward, I saw the knife kind of move away from my neck, and I just put a hand on the guy, and I end up breaking his arm.
Yeah.
Hold the broken arm, never let go, and I massage him with my elbow 35 times, right in the nose and the mouth. He spit up a couple of tools on my car, cut everything inside of my car with the knife, and blooded the whole car. And at that moment on, I knew it, that I have to do something, because I thought I was lucky to be born and raised in Rio de Janeiro and survive out kind of scuffling situation that I've been in Brazil. And I had two daughters at the time. My doubt was, I don't know if my daughter is going to be as lucky as I was to survive this environment here. So when I decided to move to America, I was thinking about my kids.
Going from with no English, no money, it would take a lot, really. So when you did get to... Who was the original Gracie to head over to America?
The first Grace that I knew, it was Horio.
Okay.
Horio is the one that we used to talk about.
Yeah.
But apparently, Horio has a cousin named Carley that I didn't know at the time that was coming to America, too. So Horio was the one that pretty much came in. And I believe he opened the doors for a lot of people.
Yeah.
If Jiu-Jitsu is here in America today, is in the United States today, you can say thank you to Horio.
Yeah.
Because that if it was not the decision, the tenacity, he was so dedicated, he was so determined to be involved to spread Jiu-Jitsu to the world, and he knew America would embrace that. So Horio was the one who did it. And not just that, man. We had some really hard times.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was really hard.
You guys were living all in one house.
Yep.
And you were sharing... I think I remember watching an interview one time when you were sharing... was it Hickson's basement with Helio?
No, it was Hickson's garage.
Hickson's garage.
Yeah, the Hickson's garage. And the garage was me, Helio, and Limon. We three used to sleep there in the garage. on the mat time.
And that's where you trained as well.
Mm-hmm. That's where you trained as well. And other room was Hickson and his wife. The other room was all the kids, four kids. So the house was packed.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty tough deal. Everybody was broke at that time.
Yeah.
It was a hard beginning and full-time job.
Yeah.
I'm talking about hard-time work. I remember Hickson have at least 10 geese hanging on the garage. Mm. And every single guy who come in, he has to put a new fresh gi, just change the gi. Mm. And you stay there. And at the time, he might have like a coconut water, might have like a, maybe a Gatorade and a water. That's it. There was no supplements, no vitamins, nothing. Yeah. You know, there was nothing available for us.
Yeah.
So it was a tough time, man.
Everyone was trying to take your head off too at that time.
Oh my gosh.
Difficult. Different time for jiu-jitsu.
No kidding. Navy yeah. SEALs. Hickson used to have some tough students.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was there. I watched for 6 months. And I not just watch. I trained for 6 months there. It was not an easy day at all.
No, wouldn't have
very
been.
Harsh.
Would have had any injuries.
Jiu-jitsu today, you guys, everybody yeah. who's
trained. Here trains, we got it easy,
huh? Oh my gosh. You have no idea. If it wasn't back at the time, it was. Yeah. You have to be crazy to survive. Yeah. To survive that yeah. moment, that time.
What was training like back in those days when it was just you got you original guys, the intensity of it and just the regimen.
Well, depend. Everything is depend the person. You used to have guys that just came, you know, for a class, single class, and leave. But we have those fanatic guys yeah. like we all get. We all fanatic. Mm. When you start training. And you start doing 2, 3, 4, 5 hours a day. I remember doing jiu-jitsu for 6 hours a day. I used to take 3 geese to the academy and bring the 3 geese complete soaking wet. Mm. And that was in a normal daily basis.
Yeah.
Normal day. And we used to train really hard. We used to put gloves. The idea that Grandmaster used to talk about was, again, it's just a self-defense concept again. What he used to do, he used to put people with gloves, and I wear gloves many times because I was a boxer. We used to put gloves, and our goal with the gloves was knock the person down. It was not to soft punch.
Yeah.
No, you want to connect the punch and knock the guy down.
It was a fight. Training.
It was a fight. Mm. Every single, training. Yeah, we done this. It was hard train.
Yeah.
And I was changed. I got a chance to watch that so many times. The guy with the gloves had no chance. You might have a chance to knock the guy once, to punch him once, but... Yeah. To do a perfect punch, a knockout punch, it's very rare.
Do you think jiu-jitsu got soft along the way?
No, I don't think it got soft. I think jiu-jitsu got smarter.
Yeah, okay.
More efficient.
Yeah. I think it got smarter.
Yeah.
You know, anybody trains jiu-jitsu the way how your body allowed you to do. Yeah. You know, if you're a younger guy, you can come to the mat, spend 5, 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day, or even can be like a Hickson Grace, you spend the whole day in the mat.
Yeah.
Mm. This, but now what's going to happen is, what kind of quality time that you put it on? If you're going to spar during the whole entire time, it's going to be tough. Mm. So you need to practice move. You need to clean techniques. You need to drill. You need to do exercise. You need to be sharp to be able to endure that. Not even count if you get injuries.
Yeah.
What are you going to do when you get injuries? You know, back in the days, we used to tape ourselves with duct tapes.
Yeah.
And we thought it was the best thing.
Yeah, it wasn't even sports tape.
No, it's not even sport tape. We thought it was the best tape ever. I remember Grandmaster Elio Grace with duct tape all over his foot.
Mm.
Wrap everything. And it was the best thing we could do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
It was great. That's duct tape.
Yeah. It's full on.
That was a tough time, man.
When it comes to Hickson Gracie, guys like us, we only ever hear just stories. And he's almost like a myth. And I remember when we were in Brazil, you described him as a unicorn. And that you never know where he is or what he's doing. But how much of an influence did he have on your life?
I think he has a huge influence. I basically owe my life to jiu-jitsu, to Hickson, yeah. and to his father.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, I was a knucklehead when I was a kid, growing up in a very wild country. You know, Rio de Janeiro. Everybody there is wild. Guns, weapons, alcohol, drugs, you name it. Mm. Everybody there was complete wild. And jiu-jitsu put me in that track.
Yeah.
You know, when I came to jiu-jitsu first time, I knew it. It was something about jiu-jitsu that I knew that just clicked on my blood.
Yeah. And how, back in Brazil, before you guys had even left, what was, did Hickson seem to have a somewhat fan base already prior, as a young Hickson?
No.
Like on the streets, if you know what I mean, as a fighter? No?
No, Hicks was a super nice. He's still a super nice. Hicks was a very humble guy. Super humble.
Yeah.
Laid back guy, down to earth. Just a cool, genuine guy. He's not a star. He's not a big name. He's
almost strays from it. Almost avoids the limelight and the publicity.
He's totally humble. He's totally simple. He's super nice.
Yeah.
Funny guy. Great sense of humor. He's just a good dude. He's a funny guy. He's just you know, when you talk about jiu-jitsu, he might get serious here and there when he's trying to, you know, give the jiu-jitsu points.
Yeah.
But he's a very laid-back individual, super laid-back, great father.
Yep.
You know, I watch him raising his kids. Just a great guy. He's just a great individual. Great example.
Do you know Kron well?
Yeah, Kron is a great kid.
Yeah, he's...
Kron was a little baby. I remember him when he born. And I remember me and Hickson, we came back when Hickson used to date his wife.
Yeah.
And I used to date my wife. And we used to double date together. So there was no kids involved in the time.
The famous fight that Hickson was involved in, I think it was on Ipanema Beach, that one where he fought the kickboxer. You were there for that, weren't you?
You talk about Hugo Duarte?
That's the one,
yeah. I remember when we went to Brazil, when we were walking along the street. Oh, and another, when we met that guy who was sitting on the park bench. Or was sitting along that bench. I'm not sure. I think it was Thiago who was telling us. Anyway, that's another story.
That guy that knew Hickson.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Yeah, but run us through that. What was his name?
I can't remember. Sydney.
Sydney.
Oh, Sydney.
Yes.
Sydney. Yeah. Good friend.
Yeah, so that fight that he had on the beach, you were involved in, or you weren't involved. I remember you watching it, and you were one of the guys pushing all the people, the crowd back.
I was not involved, no. But I was there.
You were there.
I was there, and I saw Hickson arrive, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Hanzo was with the camcorder.
Allegedly.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. Yeah, I believe it was Hanzo. I'm not 100% positive of that. But Hickson arrived, and he just went straight to Hugo. What happened with Hugo is that Hickson had a little interaction with Hugo before. And not just Hugo, but Marco Ruas. It was something that, you know how the students talk? Man, my instructor's so good. My instructor does this, my instructor does that. I think my instructor can beat this, can beat that. Start like that.
Mm.
So we grew up in a place called Flamengo. Flamengo was a very harsh, very tough neighborhood. And over there, he had a very tough guys on the streets. So Marco Ruas, the king of the streets, you know, the nickname. Marco Ruas was the youngest of five brothers. And he has a very nice brother, too. Great guys. Marco has one guy, his name is Zezé, who is a good friend of mine, super nice. Unfortunately, he left us a couple years ago. And I remember his older brother. I remember Marco was my age. And at that time, they used to train in a place called Boqueirão. It was in Aterro do Flamengo. And apparently, somebody was talking something about, no, I think this guy's this guy's that. So Grandmaster Hélio and Hickson, they went to the Boqueirão, and over there was Marco Ruas, Hugo Duarte. It was a whole bunch of crazy practitioners, like a very rough, very tough guys.
Mm.
And Hélio kind of, hey, if you guys want to do something, the time is now. If you guys want to fight, it's here. Hicks was like, no, yeah, if you want to do it. Marcus at the time apparently was not saying, no, I have nothing against this. I don't want to be involved in that. It's nothing this. And Hugo, on the other side, apparently he was just looking and give some kind of look. And Hicks, in the meantime, say, hey, what are you looking at?
Mm.
Kind of made a comment. And they kind of exchanged some looks. And after that, Hicks went back home with Hélio. Nothing happened. But the talk started.
Hmm.
And the talk started, and somebody told Hickson and Hélio that Hugo was talking stuff. It was saying that, you know, he think it could be Hickson, blah, blah. You know, saw Hickson. Hickson's not that big, you know. So anyway, one day, Hickson knew the guy was on the beach, and he arranged the camcorder to be there. And he went there and just confront him. And as you can see on the video, it's hard to see, but Hickson just beat the crap off him.
Hmm.
On the end of the fight, he had his arm wrapped around like this, like, you know, around the neck.
Like a gift wrap.
Yep. And Hickson just punched him right straight in the face, over and over with the hand full of sand. Ooh. Man, it was when the fight was over. They jumped in the water, you know, to clean up the blood. Yeah. It was a mess. And Hanzo almost fought another guy.
was John Jocks there
Anderson
too?
Just for fun.
Henderson almost fought there. Anderson. Mm. And Anderson later ended up fighting Fabio Gurgel.
Okay.
They did a fight in the ring.
How'd they go? What happened?
Fabio Gurgel murdered Anderson. Murdered him. So anyway, that's how the fight started.
Yeah.
And after that, Hugo asked for rematch. And they set up another rematch. Okay, but let's do a rematch. And the day that rematch was supposed to be happening, I went to the Grace Academy. It was about probably, you guys been there, you know how small the Grace Academy was. Yeah. It was maybe 80 to 100 people there.
Oh, shit.
You know, the place was packed. Well, guess what? Nobody showed up for the fight.
Okay.
From the other team. Yeah. And they show up 2 days later when was only a guy, his name is Samba Zuquin, very nice guy. I just met him again in the Facebook not too long ago. He lives in Europe. And he was just a little skinny kid, 65 kilos. And Elio was there by himself. Elio and Samba Zuquin was just two guys. And pretty soon, 20 guys invaded the school. And Elio tapped the guy's shoulder and said, hold on, don't worry. You're not going to miss your trip. I'm going to arrange. Stay here. Hmm. Get on the mat, start warming up. Samba Zuquin, go get Hickson. He jumps in a little 50cc motorcycle and go pick up Hickson. And Hickson was in some kind of scuffling with his wife at the time. So when he got in the bike, he was taping with duct tape in the bike. He came taping. And when he arrived and he saw the guys, Hickson just walked in. Hoyler show up too. I'm not sure who else was there. I think Elio made some phone calls. Some other people came by. I don't remember who it was. But anyway, they got in a fight. Hickson got him in the same position that he did before and just beat the crap of him and said, you give up? I'll give up. Tell me who's the best. Tell me who's the champion. Mm-hmm. And Hickson kept punching him in the head. Punch him. You're the champ. I cannot hear. Punch you again. Mm-hmm. Tell me again. I cannot hear. And just kept punching him. The fight broke up. They separated the fight. Hugo was just a huge mess. Elio said, okay, now for you guys not to miss a trip here, how many of you guys, which one of you guys would like to fight against my little son here, Hoyler? And that's when Eugenio Tadeu said, I'll do it. And they start fighting, and the police arrive to break the fight, and had a machine gun, and they did right to the ceiling. This like
in the academy.
No, down the academy.
The bottom, okay.
The bottom. And they shoot right here to the sky, and one of the lamps felt on the police officer's shoulder, and he's like, I got hit. Yeah. But it was actually a lamp that fell.
Friendly fire.
Yeah, friendly
wild,
fire.
Wild stuff.
That's wild. That's Rio de Janeiro. Crazy. But that's Rio de Janeiro in the 70s, 80s.
Yeah, we've really got it easy, don't we?
has it changed since then?
Now.
Yeah, it changed a lot. Yeah. Right? Today, you got cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
They have a, you
we've
know,
been through, it's not that bad now.
It's not bad.
No.
Not that bad.
Pretty no, cool. We're probably pretty lucky.
Wouldn't be anything like it was.
No. Not at all.
No, you wouldn't see many foreigners walking around in the 70s, 80s in Brazil.
Mm. It was a pretty wild place. It was very wild. It was a lot of macho community. Yeah. Everybody has the macho kind of, you know, disposition.
Yeah.
Macho culture. And everybody fought.
Yeah.
You know, it was just things to do. It was fight.
Mm.
It was just a tough environment there.
I say it was.
When the UFC came around, you hear a lot of reasons why Hoyce was entered and not Hickson. Is there any? Do you have any unique perspective on that? On why it was Hoyce?
No, the reason that Hoyce fought was because Hoyce was the skinniest.
Yep.
It had the nicest face.
Yep.
More like a kid face. More like a naive, maybe.
Yeah.
Innocent face. Yep.
It's a baby face.
Yep. Mm. And Hickson, even though he's. He's very friendly. If you get serious,
yeah.
Which mean,
you know, he
he's
looks
scary.
Mean.
Yeah, dude.
And he was built. He was strong.
He's built
like a rock.
Yeah.
Oh, he was a monster. He could
shaved
split.
Head. Man, he scary. Mm. Vale Tudo Hickson.
Pride Hickson. Yeah.
Pride Hickson. He did look scary. He did look very scary.
So Hoyce went in for that.
Hoist one there because he was a skinny guy. And any problem, if something happened, Hicks would be the backup.
Yeah.
They were considered Hoyler?
No, not because Hoyler was a little bit too small.
Yeah.
He was younger too. He was a bit too young.
He was just 1 year younger, but it was just, he was just too smaller. Hoyler was just... And at the time, Hoyler was in Brazil.
Okay, yeah.
Hoyler didn't make it. Hoyler came to America and he saw how hard it was in the beginning and he went back to Brazil after a year.
Yeah.
It was very difficult in the beginning. When the Grace Academy opened in 1990, I was there for 6 months. They opened Academy in, I want to say in June or July of 1990. And for the first 6 months, boy, there was 5 white belts in class. Mm. It was very hard. So they used to have to pay rent. Yeah. Each one has to get fed. It was a... And that was how the family was together. Imagine, I remember Horio going to buy fruits and stopping in Hickson's house, opened the trunk of a really old beat up station wagon, Volvo, and we take fruits back for us to eat. Mm. So he used to feed us.
Yeah.
There was a very tough environment. We didn't have no money.
What do you think the state of Jiu-Jitsu is now in the UFC?
I think Jiu-Jitsu in the UFC in the fights.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I think
even the evolution of it. Do you think it's obviously gone through some trends like the UFC does with all fighting styles. But at what point do you think it's at its best point?
No. I think what happened that you take in consideration who is the referees? No, who's the judges?
Mm.
The judges that score cards.
Yep.
For the UFC fighters.
Boxing judges.
Well, boxing judges, they have zero knowledge about grappling.
True.
They don't know nothing about. So, it's like a UFC today is a show that's prepared for the strikers or for the wrestlers. That's what they want to do.
Yep.
So imagine if they allowed a jiu-jitsu practitioner on the back to just kick the guy that's in front of him on his knees or he's tired. Imagine if you allow the knees, elbows from the bottom, you start.
Yeah,
that will change a little bit. There will be a little bit more hard for guys.
Yeah.
So basically, a lot of people they just want to learn enough jiu-jitsu to survive the attacks, to survive the arsenal that jiu-jitsu can bring in a fight.
Yeah.
They don't want to be expert in jiu-jitsu. They want to know little.
Yeah.
Because the deal with it is, you want to be standing up, body's just a slug festival. You want to score the takedowns, so you want to make sure that you're going to be on top. When you're on top, you have no worries about pass the guard.
Mm. Yeah.
Nobody wants to pass a guard. No question about that. They just want to be in the guard and ground and pound.
Mm.
And this is it. So for the public, we talk about jiu-jitsu. Joe Rogan does an excellent job when he talk about jiu-jitsu because he's an expert. He's a practitioner. Yeah. He see the value. But the public and the people around, they don't know this yet. Mm. They have no... They slowly start to understand. But jiu-jitsu is a long process. I don't know if you guys remember that. The first time you guys saw jiu-jitsu, what you thought about?
The first time I saw it?
Yeah, the first time you saw jiu-jitsu.
I didn't really understand what was going on. It didn't look like much was happening. The first time I saw it, I saw Hoist. The first time I saw jiu-jitsu.
Huh? Yeah. What do you think? First time you saw jiu-jitsu?
I can tell you about the first time I did jiu-jitsu. I was working... I'm from a boxing background. And one of the guys who owns the store, he kept telling me to come down to jiu-jitsu, go train with Phil. I was like, yeah, whatever. Went down one day, and Phil was a brown belt at the time. And I walked in, and I was like, what's a brown belt going to do? Like, he's not even a black belt. I walked in, thinking I was strong and tough, and man, like you said before, you just get raped. Yeah. And it's not fair. And but ever since then, it's like, I was
nice to you, man.
Yeah, you exactly. And you're being nice to me. And you have that, I had that mentality of like, I need to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
You felt so you had no control.
It's very hard to grasp unless you've done it.
Exactly. Like
you can't really explain to someone anything about jiu-jitsu unless they've done it, felt it.
And that's what Pedro's saying in the general public. If you don't know jiu-jitsu, you don't understand what's going on.
It doesn't look exciting.
No, it doesn't.
It's unless not you're exciting.
Brian, T-City, or Tiger.
It doesn't look exciting.
Yeah. It doesn't look exciting. It's boring to watch.
Yeah.
And as you see, the guys who goes there, they don't have the self-defense the idea because most of those guys, they crawl to the belts winning tournaments.
Yeah.
So when you get there in the UFC and somebody starts unleashing blows left and right, your black belt, after the first punch, now is a purple belt.
Mm.
The second punch, they connect in your head, and now you're a white belt.
Yeah.
You have no idea what to do.
Yeah. And then you see guys like Damian Maia. He's
great guy.
Yeah, you know Damien?
I don't know him, but he's a very good. I heard a lot of
jiu-jitsu.
I like his jiu-jitsu a lot.
He's a good ambassador for jiu-jitsu in MMA.
And Brian Ortega now with Henna Gracie's black belt.
Very good.
How good was that fight? His last one where he won it off his back.
Yep. And didn't get hurt. No. Nah. That's what jiu-jitsu is about, right there.
And he did all escapes from our syllabus.
Yep. So when you understand the jiu-jitsu,
you could almost pick the whole fight out of the syllabus.
Me and you watched it together and we picked all the moves we learned together.
Yeah.
And T-City was doing them.
That's
off his
it.
Back. It looked amazing.
It was very good.
It was so good.
Jiu-jitsu is such a clever martial arts.
Yeah, it is.
It's so intelligent that when you understand, when you start to understand the mechanics, it is just not fair.
That's right.
That's it. That's as simple as that. But UFC is not the best place yet for you to kind of compare styles. Because today is not a styles.
Sport.
It's sport and it's a person. True. It's a people. It's a guy against a guy. Whoever's more defeat ones, whoever trained the boxer, whoever connect the first punch, first elbow, is going to take the fight.
Yeah.
So the preparation is very powerful today. Mm. It's not like it was before.
No.
You know, if you think about it, now put those guys to fight no time limit.
Yeah.
No gloves.
No gloves. You know, that can be a little bit tricky.
Different story.
I think gloves would make a big difference.
Make a huge difference.
Gloves. No gloves.
Yeah. Would make a big difference.
Yeah. You can't throw punches like they do. Especially, it's not the gloves. It's the tape.
Yeah, you break your hands, man.
It's the tape underneath the gloves. You can't just throw big billing hooks like that.
No, you break your hand. Grappling. You put a punch somebody in the head, and your hand is gone.
Yeah. That'll change the game a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You did a seminar at the Gracie Academy in Torrance not long ago, maybe 4 weeks ago or so, 5 weeks ago. Is it the first academy? That's the first seminar you've done at the Gracie Academy. How was it received? How did you go?
I believe it was the first seminar ever at the Gracie Academy
that anyone's done.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah, I believe it was the first one, and it was something that's been on the work for a long time. I've been following the Hiron, Hanner, Halleck, you know, of course, Horion. And those guys are doing an excellent job when you talk about putting jiu-jitsu in a track, in a way that you can keep people motivated, you can keep students in class, they don't get hurt, and they see progress.
Yeah.
You see Brian Ortega is a good example of that.
Yeah, exactly right.
You didn't see nothing fancy.
No.
Nothing backwards, upside down, but very simple, basic moves. So that's the Grand Master Elio Gracie curriculum.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Brian Ortega beat a jiu-jitsu black belt in that fight. He didn't beat a wrestler. He beat another guy that knew. He had a fairly good idea what he was doing.
I think he was a three-time world champion.
Three-time world champion jiu-jitsu guy.
And that's the point I'm talking about here. I don't know sure how he got his belts up to black, and I'm pretty sure he's not a slacker at all. Mm. But when you start swinging punch, it's a different story.
Changes everything.
So it's important to understand that. This is not a style, but it's a person. Brian Ortega was a very efficient practitioner.
Mm.
So I went out to the Grace Academy for the seminar because I've been supported of the Grace Academy since the day one.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine what jiu-jitsu would be today if Horion Gracie, if the Grace Academy have not arriving in America. We will not be here today, for sure. Nobody will have this job. Nobody will have jiu-jitsu academies. Nobody, because the only person who put on the line, and when I talk about really on the line, was those guys who came here first and put their face right in front of somebody twice your size.
Yes, true.
You know, how many people do that today? How many people walking in school today wants to fight you?
No one.
So, now imagine myself.
So I have to say thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
You're more than welcome, brother. More than welcome. I got a couple of screws on my shoulder here.
Another the shoulder here for us.
That's why I carry your bags.
We've done it. Thanks, brother. We've done the hard work. The road is paved right now.
Yeah.
Well, we need to make sure right now that we have people doesn't get off track.
Yeah.
Because we cannot reinvent the wheel. The wheel has been there. It's been working. We can adapt. Mm-hmm. You can modify. You can make better. You can polish. But you cannot say jiu-jitsu doesn't work.
No.
That's stupid.
Anyone says doesn't work, he's...
He's just blind. Or you're blind, or you're in the denial.
Or they're just trying to sell tickets to
all sides, whatever. But they're not in a very... He's not a bright individual to say that.
No.
You know, when you understand how intelligent jiu-jitsu is, you know, for any human being to doubt the efficiency, it is just... Or you complete have no clue. That can be part of that too.
That's the majority.
It has no clue. Yeah. So I think what those kids are doing right now at the Grace Academy, I really like the program they have, where it is the students can start, they can come to the school and they will see a light on the end of the tunnel. You can see that if you put your time on the mat and you do those moves and you achieve all those hours of practice, you're going to be, in a year from now, you're going to be able to do, you know, test for your blue belt, or you're going to be able to defend yourself against somebody who is unpredictable. And if you think, well, 80% of our students is going to quit in the first year.
That's right.
So at least they quit with knowledge that they can use.
That might help them, yeah.
That might help them. Mm. So that's a very clever way to talk about it. That's very intelligent. Now, I didn't know very well the program before, and I've been looking, I've been studying. You know, I've been watching jiu-jitsu for 40 years, and I'm not a dumb guy. So if I start seeing people doing moves and I see the tapes, I see the videos, oh, they're giving belts to the tape. You know, that's what you try to say, try to catch one bad thing and make everything bad. Mm. No, it's not as the bad. The deal is this. The program is hard. You get there, you learn, you have to review the move, you have to be evaluate, you have to train. And if you think those guys doesn't know jiu-jitsu, play a visit with those guys and try to grapple with any of those kids. Just try to grapple. I do have somebody who's training there, who's been going there for the past year, a friend of mine who's been with me for 25 years. His name is Frank Cucci. Mm-hmm. And he's over there right now training and adding stuff and bringing tricks and kind of helping out to make the program stronger. And Frank is an incredible practitioner.
Yeah.
This guy's been doing martial arts his whole life. Yeah. He was one of the most accomplished Navy SEALs in America. You know, since a little kid, 18 years old, he was a Navy SEAL. You give a knife in Frank's hands, I won't put 10 guys around him. I'll guarantee that every 10 guys is going to be dead. Mm. So he's a guy who's a guy, he understands martial arts, and he's there right now, not just approving the program, but helping to polish, helping to clean. So I believe those guys did a great job with this. They call it the Grace Garage, but man, when you go there, it's not Grace Garage. It's like, this facility is incredible. Mm. It's an incredible professional. Mm. You know, and police officers, they go to the program, you know, they leave the program. They say, man, this moves. You can catch classes of police officers, and half of those guys are going to say, man, that my class here saved my life. I learned something here. That when I was at work, somebody did something against me.
And I used it.
And I used it and saved my life. Mm. And I think that's what Grandmaster Elio did it. That's what he'd done for us. That's what I see the Grace Academy is doing right now. Mm-hmm. And I believe it is a good program. I believe it's a very powerful program. We talk about kids. Think about that kids program. Mm. You know, the Bullyproof. You know, sometimes I'm saying this because I didn't know myself. So I just heard about it.
Yeah.
But now I think about, man, we in America, you know, I want to teach my kids how to learn self-defense, how to be safe. I'm going to tell my kids to go ahead and just knock the hell off somebody's kid who mess with him.
No, you can't do that.
No. I'm going to tell my kid to just go ahead and headbutt and bloody nose the other kid.
Mm. You get in trouble.
You get in trouble. Anything that we're going to teach besides jiu-jitsu, you're going to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the program, hey, you talk first. You tell him, and after that you tackle. Mm. That kind of makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm like, what? That's kind of, you know, when I talk about make sense, I'm talking about make sense even afterwards. Hey, yeah. The principal call you here in the office. Come here. Yeah. What happened?
You can explain it.
I can explain it. I talked to him. I told him, and I just tackle him. Yeah. Well, yeah.
That makes sense.
You know, that makes sense. Yeah. So that's what's important right now, I think, is to understand that how you're going to prepare somebody in the small time. You keep in mind that you have only a 1 year window of opportunity. Mm. Because if you think about the 80% of you guys going to quit.
Then most people leave, yeah.
So what I got convinced with that, because in my program, what I do, I have the self-defense on the end. That's
what
Grandmaster.
What do you mean?
Well, Grandmaster Elio, when he asked me, when I start presenting Grandmaster Elio, when he would give my red and black belt, he was asking me about self-defense, how my students do in self-defense. And I told him that all my students has to know his books, the whole entire book, mm-hmm. to be able to pass for black belt.
Yeah.
And the book is 100% self-defense.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I do the test on the end. And the Grace Academy, what they did, they flipped backwards.
They put the test at the start.
They put in the start.
Blue belt.
As a blue belt. You got to know all those moves, self-defense moves.
And then you learn the rest.
And then you learn the rest. And I believe those moves, what it does is prepare you, anybody, mm-hmm. us, to get involved in jiu-jitsu, learn a few basic moves not to get hurt. Protect your joints. I mean, that's the first thing to do. Mm-hmm. And after that, after 6 months, 8 months, maybe 1 year of practice, hey, let's start sparring now.
Well, yeah. To be honest, if you ever have been in a fight or a self-defense situation, I don't know that Berimbolo is going to save your life or any of that stuff. It's someone's going to grab your hair, punch you in the head. So it's all going to start from there. So it does make a lot of sense. It's really important. That's why I'm your student.
Just think about this. In a fight, when you think about fight, we cannot think about, you know, you're walking outside here and you're going to cross the parking lot and you're going to have a professional boxer pick fight with you. You're going to have a professional MMA pick fight with you. You're going to have a professional, a high-level Taekwondo guy pick fight with you. Mm. What we're going to see is going to be a drunk, is going to be a some little punk.
A junkie.
You know, some guy who maybe he looked to a girlfriend, and whatever. It's going to be some stupid guy, some knucklehead, who's going to swing punch, who's going to throw fly kicks, who's going to throw some crazy move. So for the unpredictable guy, I think the Grace Jiu-Jitsu is the perfect answer because it doesn't have too much fancy stuff. It doesn't have too much acrobacy, so much. It's just simple.
Block.
Make him say uncle. Mm-hmm. After making him say uncle, help him to get up and send him home. Mm-hmm. He's going to pretend he never been there in a fight. He's going to pretend he never met you.
It never happened.
How
do you like Australia?
Beautiful.
You like coming here? It's your fourth? Fourth time?
It's the third.
No, fourth.
It's third time fourth. I've seen him.
Fourth time here.
I think it was the fourth time.
It's your fourth time here.
Let's go back to Greece. It's too cold.
No,
what do you reckon?
No, Australia's beautiful, man. It's a long trip. I got to say that.
It's a huge trip. We're really happy you make it.
Yeah, it's a long. But now year. I learn it. I stop in Utah, I stop in Hawaii, and I come to Australia.
And you come back.
On the way back, same way.
That's not bad.
Now it makes it a little bit easier.
You need to break it up.
Speaking of Hawaii, do you see Ryland Lazarus's guy on today, Lewis Smolka?
Oh, did he have a fight?
Yeah, he fought Paddy Houlihan in the main event in Dublin.
He won?
Yeah, he won rear naked choke.
Oh, nice. I believe it. Yeah. Ryland Lazarus is another incredible monster.
Powerful Ryland Lazarus.
Super. And one of the nicest men you're ever going to meet in your life.
Yeah.
As a presence, as a coolest, as a knowledge. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, great dude.
Great individual. Ryland Lazarus, he can pick anybody. You go to Ryland's gym. Mm. In 1 year, you're going to be a monster.
Mm.
Because not just the class that he teach, but the concepts, and I believe that's one of the most important parts missing jiu-jitsu, is the concepts. You know, moves, we can now do moves, we can now learn moves, but the concepts is a different story. You know, we have to kind of be involved, you have to make sense.
Mm.
You know, and when jiu-jitsu makes sense by concepts, you get it. You just got it. And Ryland has this possibility, this ability. He's a very gifted individual.
Yeah, good trainer.
Great guy.
Very talented.
Yeah, over there in Maui, Hawaii has Limau in Maui. That's another great guy.
You just did a seminar, Limau. So.
I just did a
seminar. How is Limau?
Limau is a great guy.
Yeah, I know, he's great. How is he? Is he well?
Yeah, he's well. He's very doing the best I've seen Limau.
That's good.
Very good. His school's doing well. He has a beautiful family now. Super nice lady.
Yeah.
Great guy. Super nice. Yeah, he got a good family. He's a very solid guy.
That's good.
So he's doing well.
Did he give you a blue belt, Phil?
I got my blue from Limau. Yeah.
That's cool.
Luis Hereda.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, Luis Hereda. Super nice.
Cool.
Yep.
Well, back to Greece, and I think we'll finish with this. I couldn't help myself.
I knew that was going to come up.
It's had to come up.
How Phil's explained it.
Now well, you can get Professor's version of it.
Yeah, we'll hear from how it all began. That incident that went viral in the jiu-jitsu community online.
Gracie Self-Defense 101.
Great, exactly. First of all, people to fuck with on that street.
I know. How unlucky. How unlucky.
What are the chances?
Worst dude in Athens to pick. Worst two people in Athens.
That was. I saw a very funny picture of the guy. It said like this. It was a picture for myself. holding his hand, and somebody wrote something. At this moment, Alexio, Alexio knew he fucked it up.
I want to want to see that. I haven't seen that.
That's a funny one. I've seen that one too.
Awesome. That was
so funny. I saw an X-ray photo of a broken wrist, and it said, "At least you got to meet Pedro Sal."
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yep, I got
to
shake his hand.
And Phil shook his other hand. It was good.
Well, the deal is that what happened with that situation is that my daughter, the youngest one, is the super nice girl. She is the most naive, clean, good student. She's just a good soul.
Yeah, beautiful little girl.
Beautiful little girl. Just a good soul. The girl has not even a single... she doesn't have one inch of mean on her body. Nothing. Such a nice girl. I was being that way since a little baby. And she's always been my little girl, no? And not because the youngest. I got all daughters. I love all my kids the same. I don't have no difference between all of them.
Of course.
But if that guy had a touch my other daughter, she probably punched the guy right in the jaw.
Yeah. She would choked him out.
She would probably put a hold of him. But Bella, she was just nice, naive. Mm. And the only word she said was, "Mom." That's the only thing come out of her mouth. So that's explained how naive the girl was. And this guy, the face that I saw, when I saw him from far away.
Yeah.
Because he was walking. Yeah. And basically, when he touched my daughter, my wife called, "Hey, what's going on? Come here, come here." And he just turned around and started walking. He didn't confront my wife. My wife walked in the store. It was me and Phil was there. Mm. And I saw the face of my wife and the two kids. They looked like they saw something, a ghost. Mm. They three faces, complete terrified.
Yeah, terrorized. Yeah.
Terrorized. And she told me, "This guy just touched. This guy just touched my daughter, touched Bella." It's like, "What? What do you mean touch Bella?" "No, he just touched Bella." So at the meantime, I step halfway to the outside of the store, and I was on a two steps high. And when she pointed to me, I kind of, I'm from Rio de Janeiro. I can pick.
You can
pick a person in a crowd in a second. And after I pick, I don't lose it. That's it. So that's what I did. I picked him from far away, and I saw he was wearing a black shirt with a C on the back, with a cut.
Yeah.
So I just started walking, and I saw him pushing and mess with other people on the way.
Yeah.
And he make a little turn, and he hid himself behind a trash can.
Yeah, and he sat down in front of the station behind the trash can. That's
right behind the trash can. So at the meantime, I took my phone out of my pocket, and I give to my wife, and that's when Phil got ahead of me.
Phil took the reins there.
When he got ahead of me, Phil starts talking to him in Greek.
Yeah.
And when I arrived there, I just...
What did you say to him, Phil?
He was trying to get up. Yeah. So I grabbed his fingers and twisted his hand. I said, "Don't get up, don't get up, stay down." And I sort of caught one wrist, and that's when Professor got there, and he was stuck. And
so he got the double handshake.
Yeah, but Professor finished it anyway. Yeah. You said,
"Keep going, keep going."
Say the story.
So I kind of moved the trash can on the way, and Phil was over there in the corner. So I kind of sneaked myself between the trash can and Phil, and I saw his hand. I saw his arm there, and I touched the arm. The minute I touched, I kind of twisted just halfway. Mm. And I got a good lock. I got a good hand. My both hands locked. And I just used basically like 100% leverage.
Just basically, just 100%.
Just 100% leverage.
I touched it and broke.
Yeah, I just pretty much shifted my weight to my toes. And I just, and his hand just came out of my hand.
Oh.
Just
that blah. Scream happened.
Yeah, and that's where you hear the scream when
it is. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it wasn't Vlad.
He was a
the
mess,
guy.
That bloke. You see.
No, that was
the guy.
Well, the problem that when that happened, I look around very quickly and I was like, "Oh shoot!" I saw the guy's hand just tangling, just hanging like this.
Hello.
He was just tangling like a complete loose. In the video, if you pause, you see his hand like a more than 90 degrees, just hanging. Mm. So what I did, man, I gotta put it back. So I hold it and I snap back. Whoa. I just pull it, and that's when I drag him to say sorry to my daughter, because I want to make sure that my daughter remember that face, not the one before.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Because at that face, he was like a little, "I'm so sorry." Yeah. He was like crying. Yeah. I want to make sure my daughter remember that.
That face, yeah.
And later when I punched him in the guts, my daughter's like, "Daddy, I can't believe it. Did you punch him in the guts?" That's how naive she was. She asked me if she did.
She would have been so happy.
She kind of asked me, did you punch? I said, "Well, Bella, you saw. Yeah. I was in front of you." But that's how naive she is. She's such
I doubt that guy's going to be doing that too much more in the future.
Oh,
He'll never grab anything.
He learned
again.
His lesson.
He had a bad experience.
You have no idea how many women I saw after that that came to me and actually thank for the moment, just for... Because some women, they've been living their whole entire life with a ghost in the closet. Somebody touched them in the past, and nobody did nothing.
Yeah. Mm.
Somebody did something in the past with a woman, and she's told somebody, nobody believe it. So for them to see somebody taking a step forward and make a guy like this pay back for the lack of respect, I did that not just for my daughter, but for every woman, because I think women, we don't touch it without consent.
Yeah.
Period. That's how it is. I got, you know, six girls.
They're going to be our mothers. They're going to be mothers.
Exactly.
Us, you know,
man, I cannot even imagine somebody touching a girl like that, a woman like that. You know, our mothers, our grandmothers. Mm. A woman makes family. Mm. She's the main core, you know, for the family. Mm-hmm. You know, they have so much power. We need to have respect, and they're beyond respect. Women has to be treated like, you know, the best thing, the best.
Yeah.
Without women, I couldn't be here without my mom.
No,
exactly.
None of us could.
So I'm a mom. I'm a mommy's boy.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with that.
What seminars you got left?
We've still got. We're traveling to Nexus in Coburg tomorrow.
Yep.
So that's Monday the 26th. Then Tuesday we're in Adelaide at Element Jiu Jitsu. We've got a day or two off where Professor might travel up to Warburton and maybe kill something with Dave and eat it.
Oh,
well,
hunting?
Hunting.
Yeah.
There you go.
You want bow hunting?
Wednesday, Thursday.
Oh, yeah. No, not bow. Just give me a rifle. Give me a rifle and a 38 caliber.
Dave will hook you up.
We then heading off to Newcastle to Best and Gracie to do a seminar there. Then we've got one in Ballina, Gold Coast at Axis Jiu Jitsu.
Awesome.
Then we head down to Sydney at Igor MMA. Yep. And then Professor's off back to Hawaii to do one at Ryland.
Ryland Lazarus.
Gracie Techniques.
Yep. And that'll be the conclusion of the 2015 tour for Mr. Sauer.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Pedro, is there anything you want to leave us with?
I just want to, you know, wish all the Australian people here to keep training, be smart, pick and choose who you train with, be intelligent. Remember, Jiu-Jitsu is not a sprint race. You have to think about 10 years, 20 years. Think about 30 years from now, what you're going to be. Mm. How you want to have a happy, long life. Be smart with your train. Try to look for qualified instructors. Be careful about upside down, benders, backwards. Don't you ever trust your joints to no one besides yourself. Mm. You are the responsible guy to take care of your joints. Don't you ever trust people pushing a little bit too far or going too far. Avoid confrontation at any cost, and you'll be fine. You're doing jiu-jitsu. If you follow curriculum when you come to class, if your instructor is not teaching good curriculum, just be careful. You just don't get yourself hurt.
Okay, what a perfect way to end this podcast. Thank you, Pedro, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
It is my pleasure.
Thanks
all the
so
best
much,
for
professor.
Everybody here. Take care,
awesome,
guys.
Professor.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you.